It's Wednesday, September 12, 2007, and you're listening to episode 69 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Adam.
My name is John.
And my name is Luke.
You know, now that we do the introductions this way, it's gone from me playing favorites to sort of like throwing a chicken bone out to a bunch of dogs.
Why? I always go second.
We usually always start from the left and then go to the right.
Yeah, the only people who change places are John and I.
I just got to toss it out there and see who goes next. But by the way, note from the Humane Society just got handed, do not give chicken bones to your dogs as this may actually hurt or kill them. Now, moving off of that PSA, it's about time, I think, for another contest. We've not had one in a while.
I'm excited about this.
This is a good one.
Yeah, I'm visibly excited.
And
yes, you are.
Unlike the last one, this one is not going to get us in any trouble. So here's the contest. We've decided that just to prove that we can take it as well as we give it out, we are inviting you, the listener, to make a spoof podcast of Fear the Boot. Now, the rules for the contest are pretty simple. First of all, it has to be in an MP3 format. Secondly, you've got to stick to the rules that we apply to our own podcast. And by that, I mean no religion, no politics. Please keep it PG rated. Also, because we're trying to bury the hatchet, please don't mention that one particular award ceremony. Outside of that, have fun with this. You've got, we'll say 3 to 5 minutes, you know, no shorter than about 2 or 3 minutes, no longer than about 5 minutes, just a couple minutes. And you can do it by yourself, with your friends, whatever. Your only goal is to make a spoof of Fear the Boot. And while we are not setting out any specific criteria of what we're looking for,
extra credit for best Luke Lisp.
What we are, I'll tell you right now, what we are looking for is funny. So
the first guy that gets the idea to have one person play Adam and I is really a genius.
So, and there you are.
And there you are.
John, did we just win our own contest?
I think so.
He did just self-elect himself as a genius. So let's do some time scheduling on this. You know, I haven't quite figured out how I want to handle this exactly, because I realize this one may take a little bit. We're going to let this run somewhere about 6 weeks. And as for the prizes, since I don't have a specific finishing time, I also don't have a specific prize list, but I can tell you some of the things that will be in there. We'll do the usual thing, let you pick something out of the Fear the Boot shop. Also, the guys from Q Workshop, that's Q-Workshop.com, have offered to give over several sets of dice, I believe from their Elven series. And these are kind of high-end designer dice. If you check out their stuff at Q-Workshop.com, you'll see what I'm talking about.
They do look really cool.
This is what Vin Diesel plays with.
This is not just like your average, random box of green six-siders. I mean, these are some kind of cool dice. And we're going to get some other things, because I realize this contest is going to take, you know, at least some amount of work. So if you have your own recording equipment and know how to put out a podcast, get out there, get to work. We're going to give you about 6 weeks or so to do this. Hopefully next show we will have a specific prize list, and we will also have a specific deadline for the entries. As for now, just go ahead and get your wheels turning.
Oh, they're turning.
The rubber is about to hit the road. In fact, Bad Judgment might intersect with a Visa gold card and equipment.
You know what the hilarious thing is? The next time he gets one of those panels, I'm totally going to jump that line. Like, that's the first thing I'm going to lead off with.
It'll be the first one we've done in which he didn't drop it.
You won't nuance it, right?
I do want to nuance.
Oh, I'll nuance it like you wouldn't believe.
Nuance the ever-living crap out of it. We're actually down a pair of headsets, which is why Tex isn't here. We need the headsets, because since he's joining us via Skype, if we don't have four headsets, one person can't hear him. I wish he was on here, because he's actually been on some dates, and we need to heckle him about that.
That sounds like a bonus episode.
Dig into
that
his personal
sounds like
life.
A terrible, great bonus episode.
Online dating continued.
So, other quick announcements. First of all, want to send a shout-out to carpegm.net. That's CarpeGM.net. It's another podcast out there run by a guy who's a very good friend of the show. So if you're looking for another podcast to check out, just to see if it's your thing or not, stop by carpegm.net.
His name is Chris Engler, and I'm friends with him on MySpace and Facebook, so you know he's real.
Yeah, I've actually swapped quite a few emails with him. He's a really good guy.
I'd like to give a shout-out to Clyde from the Theory from the Closet podcast for trying to at least set me straight on GNS theory. If anybody out there like myself would like to learn a little bit more, that's a place to go. Theory from the Closet.
So and you said it's a show that's dedicated purely to GNS?
From what I've seen, there are a lot of interviews on it with various designers.
So how did he set you straight on? Because I fully admitted my ignorance as the last episode, and that hasn't changed in the past week. So I'm curious, what exactly did you get right and what did you get wrong, at least according to this Clyde fellow?
Pretty much I got it all wrong.
Oh.
Well, good. Then I'll take the victory in our argument.
Well, I don't think, you know, like I said, I really didn't read much of it because of the attitude. So now that there's not the attitude.
Excuse me, sir. We on Fear the Boot, I mean, you are new, so you may not know this, right. But we at Fear the Boot do thorough research on all points.
Exactly.
And legitimize every single claim that we make.
Right. I've noticed that a lot, and I support that.
I pull off the dusty tomes of my recently formed opinions based on names and places and prejudices I've carried with me for a long time, and then run full bore into an opinion that's probably not at all qualified, but by merely stating it, it has become a fact. It's like Wikipedia, except in podcast form.
That's what I said last episode.
Yeah, see? GNS is exactly what you've just said it is, because Lukepedia has now gone on record.
Hey, he's a real doctor.
Exactly.
He is a real doctor.
I was offended by the attitude. Well, I'm not offended, but I was put off by the attitude, and that is the fact I based everything on. So I think that's a good enough
fact. Do you think that fact still stands? Is the attitude
still
there? Oh,
yeah. I mean, this podcast has made it a little more accessible to me, that's for sure, because the attitude is lacking. But the rest of the internet, attitude's in full bore.
Okay, so we'll at least give Clyde some props there.
He's named Clyde. Who the hell is named Clyde these days? That's hot. I like good names, and that's a good name.
I almost said Clyde, but some advice, isn't Clyde.
Don't email Luke again. Yeah. I think you're sending the wrong signal.
It's too late.
So, all right. So
my antenna's up.
Clyde was at least, you're saying he's a really cool guy and all that. So, okay, if you're really interested in GNS, and what was the name of his show again?
Theory from the Closet.
Theory from the Closet. Adam?
I'd like to thank aspiring artist on our forums for drawing a cartoon caricature of me, because it was hilarious.
We're going to have to link this one from the show notes.
Yes.
Explain what it is.
It is a cartoon caricature of me in a furry suit wearing the Fear the Boot boots. It's brilliant.
I'd like to thank him, too, because that was the best laugh I had last week, I think.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. We'll link it from the show notes. If you want to see Adam, an artist's interpretation of what he might look like in a fursuit. That detail killed me.
I know, it was awesome.
I scrolled down and looked at the footwear on the character and noticed it's the Fear the Boot boots that you're wearing.
He even had that smug, smarmy expression on his face.
That dirty mustache.
Yeah. Yeah. That terrible half-grown lawnmower mustache you're rocking now.
I see your beard, and I'm so jealous, but I cannot grow hair on this.
I see you not growing the connectors there, and I'm like, oh, he's trying so hard.
He's trying so hard.
Which part of your heritage do you blame for that?
Oh, that's a good question. Both.
Well, you're Hispanic on one side. Yes, it says all the same. What are you on the other side?
White.
Okay.
Mom is like Euro trash. So
okay. I was looking for
I'm Euro trash too, but I have enough Italian to connect my beard.
I'm Euro trash, but I have enough German and Irish that I'm an excellent drinker, and that's about it.
I'm Austrian, which is where I get my world conquering abilities.
I see.
Except it only lasts up until about early 1900s and then falls apart, and that's pretty much what's happened here.
But you get those.
Then you start getting Anschluss left and right and partitioned and all that.
Exactly. And then it has to become the Eastern Reich and all that. So
you do get those cool helmets though with a little spike on the top.
Yeah.
Those things are awesome.
We get those. Let's see. On the other side, I've got Scotch Irish.
That's cool. I got some of that.
Boyd Clan. And I've got a tiny bit of Choctaw, which really, as far as I can tell, you can only really see in my luxurious hair. So
luxurious.
So you're an Indian outlaw,
John?
Did they move the whole Indian nation and stick them on this reservation? Or was that just a lie?
I have been in the Navajo Nation before.
Wow,
where they have like their own police and stuff, and it's mostly just casinos and a lot of
that
drinking.
Sounds good to me.
That sounds great to me.
It's casinos and a whole lot of drinking, except it's all Indian themed.
So it's my Friday night.
Yeah. Except it's not Indian themed, I would.
Well, no. Harris themed.
Okay. I say let's
video poker themed. Bud Light and gin themed. Oh, anyway, you were saying, Dan.
All right. Well, you had something real and gaming related for us.
I did have something real and gaming related for a change. Last night, I was running my little nooblets through the Star Wars game, and a thought occurred to me. About every 10 or 15 minutes, the game would completely hit a brick wall as they all squabbled amongst one another about what to do next, never agreeing and sometimes getting quite acrimonious. I wondered how I had failed as a GM to let this happen, or if indeed it was my fault. So what do you guys say? How do you prevent them from just going at each other's throats trying to say, oh, well, we're going to do this or we're doing that? Eventually, I decided to have speeder bikes approach them at increasingly close distances until they were being fired upon.
Well, I don't.
Misdirection.
That's a good method.
I don't know that you necessarily failed, because the issue you're describing is not a character problem, it's a player problem.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before, that when you sit down at a gaming table, there are two dynamics occurring. There's a game dynamic, and there's a human dynamic. And I've had people write me saying, well, I've got a problem in my group with this and this and this is happening. And it's like, I write him back. It's like, dude, you don't have a gaming problem. Your friend's a jackass. It's like, that's your problem.
Yeah.
And it's time to have a sit down with whoever it is, or tell somebody to grow up or kick somebody out of the group or whatever the right resolution is. The problem here is not one of gaming. It's one of human interaction. I have seen this a lot in my own games. I won't mention Mike and Tim, but two particular people that have been associated with the show can typically get very little done when they're at the game table together, because if there is not a clear pecking order of command, they will just bicker and bicker and bicker.
See, I had this last semester between two specific players, and they kind of balanced it out. There was this whole Cold War chess game going on with the other players.
You know what we need is, we need to do something impromptu here, if you don't normally do during the regular episode. Hey, Carla, can you come down here a second?
Oh, my God.
Uh-oh. Oh, we got the dogs involved.
You just cast Summon Dog.
I just cast Summon Dog.
Exio Dog.
Yeah.
Expelliarmus.
Usually we're not quite this interactive on the regular episodes.
We've been doing that a lot recently.
I know. Excuse the dogs.
Hey, Luke, who let the dogs out?
Woof, 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 woof.
I knew you'd come through.
Hey, girl.
Here, Carla, could you sit down at Luke's mic for a minute? We're talking about games that get stopped because of the fact that players can't agree on a course of action. And as someone who has been here during many, many, many games to watch my other gaming group, would you talk for a minute about Mike and Tim trying to figure out what to do next?
It's like they were married.
That's good.
I mean, that's basically it. I mean, it was just they couldn't agree on anything. And Tim's always trying to do the ninja fun, crazy, sort of a power gamer type action thing. And then Mike is just too busy criticizing that, but at the same time, Tim would be like totally ignoring Mike. But it's been several years since I've seen them play, so
yeah. But the point is,
that seems to be the solution then.
Yeah, I mean, how many games though did this go down?
Every game.
Every yeah, exactly. Every single.
Because the phone would ring and it'd be Teresa, and then Mike would roll his eyes and be like, "Oh, not again," and vice versa. Or Mike would start talking because he always brings his girlfriends over.
That's why you need to have the boyfriend girlfriend rule if you're a GM.
Yeah.
Significant others automatically get invites, not necessarily because you like them or because they won a game, but because it knocks out a distraction.
Well, another way you got to handle that is significant others cannot be related in the game, because if you get too googly-eyed, just recently started dating, madly in love,
and that can be annoying,
and their boyfriend
as
and girlfriend in the game as well, or married in the game
that's
as
obnoxious.
Well, annoying with a capital A.
Sometimes it's properly and amusingly RP'd.
Yes, rarely.
Sometimes
yeah.
It's never.
Yeah. And sometimes people survive tornadoes.
That's true.
So, yeah, that's not real likely. all right, getting back to how we actually solved it. Thank you, Carla, by the way,
done.
For
okay.
your insight
you
and your guest appearance.
Bye, Carla.
Bye.
So, all right, getting back to our solutions for solving this, or excuse us while we release the dogs. Normally, we edit this out of regular episodes, but
release
I'm feeling
hounds.
Lazy.
It's episode 69, so everything.
Oh, yeah, they were all like, oh, are you going to do something crazy for episode 69?
Yeah.
So there it
there
is.
There it is, half the episode.
Look, we talked about relationships, too.
Dun, dun, dun.
We did.
Holy crap.
We
dun,
did.
Dun, 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 dun.
It really is an episode 69. Half of what we're doing is right side up. The other half is upside down.
Ooh,
so
dirty.
I get it.
Anyway, I don't know that. I think you can at times have game solutions to this, where if you've got two players that cannot agree on a course of action, then, okay, you can maybe push them a little bit, either through pressure, like the speeder bikes show up for no particular reason, or...
Oh, no, there was a reason, but they just didn't get to talk anymore. They had to fight.
It could be for no particular reason. But sometimes it's hard because, like, let's say I'm running a Shadowrun game, and they're planning how they're going to do the next run. And as Shadowrun should be run... Yes, John, go and get your not at all in here. Just
No. Shadowrun sucks. Continue.
Okay. So I run Shadowrun the way at least I think it should be run, where there's a lot of paranoia.
I do, too.
Everybody's,
I don't run it.
Yeah, everybody's out to get everybody else. And so they spend a great deal of time where they're in a safe spot planning. And I can't necessarily have somebody come along and just push them in a particular direction.
Oh, but yeah, but there's a point to where them sitting in a room planning drags on for,
and you could have a dragon fly by their high rise.
Well,
or an ogre show up and call them and say the stock market crashed or something.
Well, I was going to say that's the two solutions that I have found that work for this is either one, an NPC gets involved and kind of nudges them in a particular direction, or I, as the game master, say, look, guys, you guys have been talking about this for the past hour. 2 hours.
Yeah.
We've literally had these debates go as long as 2 hours.
Yeah,
before.
See, that drives me nuts.
And
yeah.
It's just kind of like, all right, you guys, you need to decide on a course of action. If they say, well, wait a minute, we can't decide because as a game master, you do this to us and this to us and this to us. I'll be like, all right, fine. We came here to play, not to strategize for 2 hours.
Yeah, that drives me nuts. It's like, dude, I want to play this game. I want to talk about
playing another
this
option
game.
Is to point the mighty GM finger at one player, say, what do you do, and then go all the way down the line. And then that happens.
Right.
If they can put it together and act coherently, great.
Countdowns work really well for the smaller planning ones, like if somebody can't decide their action and bouncing back and forth, just doing the countdown works pretty fast.
You as a game, in an initiative round, if somebody's taking too long, I'll hold up all 10 fingers and start ticking them off. But if my last finger goes down...
Which finger is that, though?
That would be the pinky finger on my left hand.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's not my last finger.
Nah. That's only for the final countdown.
Yeah. Once that one goes down, it's... If you have not given me an action, your character stands there and thinks about it for this round.
He's reflecting on the deeper mysteries
but
of life.
It's like when Ness doesn't call his mom for long enough. He just gets emo.
But with the when they're planning, I just hit this point where it's like, as a game master, I have to make some concessions that, okay, fine, you guys just pick a plan. And I'm not saying I'm just going to hand it to you on a silver platter, but I'm not going to go out of my way to screw you. So just pick a plan and go with it, and let's move the game
along.
I hate
it when they come up with a brilliant plan, and then some guy goes, but no, the GM will do this, and we'll all be dead. And I'm not going to do that.
Yes.
That's great. Damn it.
That's exactly what happened. Well, it's like, we can do this, but it's the middle of the day, and a sniper is going to kill us all. And I'd be like, okay, fine. I will give you the concession as a game master. I hate metagaming like this, but it's been 2 hours. I'm not going to shoot you with a sniper. Just freaking move.
See, I like the planning as long as the players are staying true to the game and really actually making some progress. I usually set a time limit to help with that. You know, if they want to play in for 10 or 15 minutes, that's okay with me, but 2 hours or even a half hour is generally too long for anything in a role-playing game.
Because it's like, as soon as you get there, something has changed, and then you just chuck the plan anyway.
No plan survives initial contact.
Exactly, yeah. No.
Let's just go. We can just roll with it. He's not going to kill us. Yeah, who cares? Let's go.
And that kind of metagaming, it takes place enough in RPGs that I like it when people do plan because it shows a little bit deeper thought and a little bit deeper immersion.
Well, and with some games, it's important because like I said, like a game like Shadowrun, that's supposed to be about what you can pull out of your sleeve and all this kind of stuff. The planning's important. Or look at a game like Battletech, especially if you're an older Battletech, you have this limited series of supplies. Limited
resources.
Wait, we
know something about newer Battletech?
Well, I'm talking like 3050-ish.
Oh, okay.
Battletech ended at 30.
I thought you meant like Hexes versus HeroClix.
No. Battletech ended at 3055, and even then it's kind of fade.
Battletech ended at 3025.
Well, that's just because there was this long star wipe from 3049 through about 3055, where you can still kind of, if you lean into your speakers, make out what they're saying, but it really doesn't matter. But the point is that if you're in like older Battletech, planning of your resources and planning of your battle and how you're going to go about it is so integral to the game, you can't strip it out. It should be in there. And I'm with you, Luke, that I enjoy it. Like even when I'm running my own homebrews that don't necessarily have that level of resource management and stuff, but I still like to hear them kind of think through, man, there's four of us, we're on an alien world inhabited by nothing but them. How are we going to take this one guy out and get off planet alive?
Mm-hmm.
And there should be some planning that goes into it, but you can hit this point where ultimately the point of gaming is to play the game and have fun doing so. And you just got to make that decision where when you look around the table and the faces of two of the four players are completely glazed over, or worse, one's reaching for a Game Boy magazine or laptop, and there's two others that are standing up pointing at each other and just carrying on like a married couple, as Carla said. I think as a game master, you just got to say, look, this, stop.
Yeah, last night the text messaging broke out among the board parties. And I was like, oh my God, this is like calling during
game killer
games.
Yeah. Spycraft is one of those games that actually encourages the planning. It's pretty neat. I've played one game, and literally we spent 2 hours planning, which wasn't boring at all because there were rules for it. That was the game, planning it and then executing it. And that was a lot of fun, although I don't know I'd want to do that for an entire, year-long campaign. But it was great for a one-shot.
All right, so I'm suggesting metagame solutions. John, as an in-game solution, do you want to expand a little bit without going into a huge gaming story, exactly what you did to break this up?
Well, I did a couple different things because it kept happening. One was the aforementioned, all right, what do you do, what do you do, what do you do? All right, that happens. The other was a scout recon guy shows up. There's one of him. There's four of you. Please kill him. let's get this thing moving. And they did, and they took him captured and found out all this information, beat it out of him. They did a good job with that.
Oh, wait. That's another killer right there, is capturing somebody usually leads to huge arguments about, okay, we captured him, now what do we do?
That argument actually happened. There was the, let's blast him, set for stun. No, he's going to work with us. He means it. No, he's going to betray us at the first second. We got to kill him now. But they did a nice job. They beat him up for info. We actually have a guy playing an R2 droid who referred me to his little saw that they show up in the movies. And the soldier character walked up to him with the R2 and threatened to cut his arm off and stuff. And it worked. So, yeah, I actually have that guy lying on the floor now. I have to think of what to do with him. The funny thing is, they're so new that they think I know where everything is going.
They haven't realized the power they wield yet.
No, they haven't realized that they're suggesting things that I'm now going to incorporate that I didn't think of.
That's the best right
there.
That
is the best. What if there was a secret message hidden on our R2 character? Cool. I think there will be now.
What if?
Yeah.
You know, when I play, I don't have this problem too often. I think it's just because I'm enough type A that it's just kind of, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And it's not per se like, oh, I'm so brilliant that nobody can argue with my plans or whatever. It's just, for whatever reason, people don't usually.
And when I play, I'm usually such a reactionary that I say, okay.
Let's go. Are you that, or I don't wait for discussion? Like, I can think back to, as far as I'm concerned, the only White Wolf game that exists, which is Hunters Hunted. We were playing a game of that, and we
poor bastard.
We captured a vampire, and there was no group discussion about what we're going to do with him. My character and Tim's character took him out back behind my mansion, and we set up a tent, and we put him in there, and we got a chainsaw, and we got out fang rippers, and we did things that were so graphic that we actually upset the other two players, and the game ended.
Damn.
But wow.
I'll tell you, there was no long-term discussion that led up to this.
But, you know, that can almost cause just as many fights, because I've been
You've
in games
never
where,
yeah, the film, post where fact
you, yeah, one guy
the
goes planning, and says, right? Well, I'm going to do this. Everybody's like, well, why did you do that? We need this guy for other purposes, or we need to do
well,
this.
Here's the difference, though. And not that I'm encouraging this, but if you do that, people are mad at you for about 5 minutes, and maybe we'll bitch about it for 30 minutes post-game. As opposed to the two hours
of
planning.
True. And it's a lot, and that is in character, too. It just gets annoying if it happens all the time. Then you can tell
Although
it's a player
eventually
trait.
The player characters might figure out that if they take that decisive action while everyone is talking, you, the GM, will let them do it.
Right.
So they race each other to preempt each other.
John, do they listen to the show, John? Will they know now that what they're, gonna, what they're supposed to
I've
do?
I've told them the URL, but I don't think any of them have actually bothered.
I think so you can also hit an alternate human dynamic, which is, I guess that's my phrase for this show, where you can have players that are quieter than other players that get intimidated by that. I have had that a lot in my games where there are some players that really want to be involved, but they're just not as loud as other players.
Mm-hmm. And you can have the girlfriend who won't countermand her boyfriend and the boyfriend who won't countermand his girlfriend. Yeah. And I have both in the two dating couples that are at my table.
I have seen both of the above. For example, back when Mike and Chad, last time they game together, Chad is very strong personality. Very, you know, he'll stand up and say, I'm doing this. And Mike wants to get an action in, but he's too timid. And so the end result is Mike never gets an action. Then after the game, he's kind of upset about that. So I had to start actually saying, okay, this is Chad's action. Mike, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Just to give.
And I do that all the time.
I find you do that with a lot of players. Like when you find the quiet ones, you have to turn to them and make sure to prompt them or else they won't act sometimes. That's part of being a game master, is knowing what your players like.
And we also had a game where a guy was gaming with his girlfriend, now ex-girlfriend, thankfully, because nobody had a real high opinion of her. And we were playing, once again, a game of Shadowrun by coincidence, and she had the plan that was the dumbest idea mankind has ever come up with. Making toast in your bathtub was slightly above this idea. But he would not contradict her. And we kept saying, dude, this is a horrible idea. It's going to result in terrible things. And of course it did. And
one uniting thread in all these horror stories is Shadowrun. I just want you to think about that.
No, because I could come up with equally bad stories about D&D. I could come up with one about Battletech. There was a guy in a Battletech game who did not stop to consult with anyone about what he was going to do.
Yeah, his name is Phil.
No, this was way pre-Phil.
Is no time before.
This
was
before you were even playing BattleTech, and they were supposed
here
to.
Here comes the old man angle.
Here we go. They were supposed to get a computer core. He jumps his mech into the hex that has the computer core. We shot the dice. He lands on the mainframe and crushes it beneath his mech. It would have been a great idea if he'd landed one hex in any direction, but he landed on that hex. So I've seen this in many, many different games.
And then you as a GM are struggling to think, okay, how am I going to progress the plot now that the One Ring just got thrown back into the river and won't be found again for another 1,000 years?
Well, fortunately, the broader campaign was open enough that it's just like, okay, you've lost this. And so, therefore, the enemy, this was years ago, so I don't remember how it worked out, but because you didn't get this...
It moves the flow chart down to a negative direction, but the war continues.
Yeah, in the next battle, the enemy's going to have a bonus they would not have otherwise had.
That's good GMing.
So now they've got a satellite uplink that tells them something, or I don't remember, it was years ago, but they've got something they wouldn't have otherwise had.
There is no motivated party of PCs like one that just botched the last mission.
Got an email question, which we'll tackle as either, well, it's an advice topic. Will it be the main advice topic? I don't know. It depends on how much we have to say
maybe
on
co-advice
it.
Co-advice topic.
So this one comes from a guy by the name of James. And
hi, James.
James wants to know, I give his last name, but I don't know if he wants me doing that or not. But James asked me, at what point does a PC become an NPC? Okay, at what point does the game master take the sheet away from the player character, or the player, that is, and turn that character into an NPC. And
when he takes responsibility for his actions, and or when he loves a woman.
When he reached the point of Phil.
He threw out a couple ideas of times when he has done this. I came up with one or two of my own, but I have actually never done this. So I'm going to read off possible situations that could lead up to this. Well, I guess before we even do that, Have you guys ever taken a player character sheet away from them and said your character's an NPC?
I have
now?
With their consent.
What was the situation? Why did you do it?
A fall to evil, which the player recognized he was not going to allow the character to collaborate with any of the other player characters. And he said, all right, you're going to make him a villain now, and I need to play another character because this guy is stalking off into the night, planning the rest of their deaths.
Cool. That was number... He actually gave two possibilities. That was the first one that came to my mind he did not list, is when the player becomes, or the character rather, becomes evil.
Yeah.
And in fact...
Or like, opposed to the player character party for any reason.
In some of the old Star Wars games, this was required.
Yeah, there was the mechanics of West End, and I think the first go on the D20. There's a... Actually, it's in Saga, too. You have dark side points, and there's an option to make the character an evil PC or to just take it.
I say in West End, I think it was required. That when the character went dark side, the game master was required to turn it to an NPC.
That happened to me, actually.
In the newer versions, at least the one I played, because I played Go 2, the pre-Saga D20, so it's the updated D20, where you had this thing, like, as you advance down the dark side, every level, like your character's body would rot and all this
weird
stuff would happen.
I'm sad it's gone from Saga.
But
in Saga, you just reach the moment of evilness once you max out your wisdom score and dark side points or something like that.
They did not have to take your character away. Sometimes in D&D, I've seen things like if you play Ravenloft, if you get too evil, there becomes this point where like the land or whatever takes over your mind, at least in earlier editions. I've not played any recent versions of Ravenloft, but back when it first came out, if your character got too evil, there came this point where the game master had to take your character over.
And in almost all of the settings, there have been the various cursed helm of evilness or an intelligent weapon, which you can use for a while and then takes over your mind and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the GM has to intervene in that case, unless the role player is just so smashing and willing to work against his own self-interest that you can trust him.
I've never taken a character from anybody, but I've handed over two of mine, one on purpose and the other one was pseudo on purpose. There was times where it needs to be done.
Why did you hand him over?
Well, one, I was playing a one-shot character in a Star Wars game. It was pre-episode one, and the guy was running what he thought would be episode one, which was kind of cool, and I knew it would be a one-shot, so I said, hey, what if I be a dark side character and try to tempt somebody? And that ended up being the main villain for the campaign, even though I ended up being able to make more sessions. He's like, I want to steal that from you now.
I was about to say, what? One-shot campaign?
Yeah. Well, I could only make the one-shot. Oh, I should have been more clear. And then the other one was I was playing a barbarian in Hackmaster, which is the original D&D, which doesn't get along well with magic users. I played myself dumb enough that worked for a while, but eventually they got to the point where nobody could play anything they wanted because my character wouldn't let them. So I said, even though it was the best character I've ever made and had the most fun ever with him, it was time to let him go.
Sometimes the ones you lose like that are the most memorable.
He, as everybody agrees, is one of the most fun character of that entire campaign.
All right, so we got three if we review here real quick, and then I'm going to throw one in here that I know hasn't been said, one I think hasn't been said. Three reasons I can come up with between my and James' list here as to why a game master take a character away. One is the character becomes too powerful. That the character is so powerful that he or she can dominate the plot or combat or whatever to the point that the rest of the characters just feel like fifth wheels. The second reason is the characters headed in a radically different direction than the rest of the game. We've told the story before about the innkeeper that would not leave his inn. You'd either need to change this character or this character, you need to roll up a new one because this ain't going to work.
Or it's the entire plot or your character, and it's your character.
Or your character is so angry at the party that he or she's just going to storm off into the night, never be seen again. The third possibility, and this one I know we mentioned, is the one where the character becomes so evil that they become a detriment to the party, that this is just going to create World War III across the table and is just going to end up destroying the game. Now, here's the thing. I personally have never done this. In my entire almost 20 years of game mastering, I have never once taken anyone's character sheet away from them. I have always handled this in the metagame. I have always sat down with someone and said, look, your character's headed in this direction. Is there anything you can do to fix this? And the person will either say yes, or they'll say no. The way I wrote the character, he would do this and only this, and I don't want to change it because it wouldn't be true to the character, so I'm going to roll up somebody new. Or similarly, if someone's too powerful, I'll sit them down and say, look, dude, it's my bad. I gave you that ring. I should not have given you that ring. I did not realize how you were going to abuse it. Seriously, for the sake of keeping the story going and to let all the other players feel like they're important, I'm not going to take it away from you, but can we tone its power down, that instead of doing all this stuff, it has a more limited set of powers? And I have been very, very fortunate in that to date, my players have been reasonable enough that they have always worked with me. And in some cases, I'll work with them. There was a Star Trek game I was running where they were not Federation affiliated. They were playing Independence. They stole a ship. There was a cloaking device on the ship they were not supposed to get a hold of. And they managed to just, against all odds, do the right things, and they got the cloaking device. I let them have it, because it's like, you earned it, you can have it. It's not game imbalancing, because there are drawbacks to having a cloaking device. You know, you can't shoot while you're cloaked. It just lets you get away with a little bit of stuff. So there's some give and take here. Well, I'll let them have some things I didn't expect. But when they get too far, then they have always been very accommodating with me. But I don't know that I can leave the advice there, because not every group is so fortunate.
No.
And I've even sat in groups where it didn't come up, but had it come up, I know there's that one guy at the table who is not going to work with me. He's going to be a hard ass all the way into the end.
But at that point, it's a player problem again. It's a point of somebody's not working to make the game better. Somebody's working against you. When you admit, look,
for the company,
I screwed up, I messed up, please make this right and work with me, and they're saying no, that's a player problem. That's not anymore, I screwed up and don't have a resolution. I have a resolution somebody's not accepting.
But ultimately, you still have to...
We have to beat
solve
out there's
a problem.
Yeah. Well, let me hit this, because I agree with both parties. From Luke's angle, I completely agree that when you sit down at the table, the understood goal of everyone there has to be that we are here to have a good, fun game that is fun for everyone at the table. And if somebody
except
is
Luke
so hard-nosed about their character or about their power level or about whatever that they will not work with you, they have not sat down to be part of the team. And by the team, I don't mean the party. By the team, I mean the team of human beings trying to play a game. But having said that, I will also agree with John and Adam that if you've got the situation, you've still got to deal with it. Mm-hmm. We're not going to give you counseling advice for dealing with jerks, but what are some things in-game you can do to try and deal with that?
Ask him about his feeling. Try and get to know the inner him.
I got a better way. They get mugged in the middle of the night, and they lose that magic item.
Excellent.
Or the best literary example, this is probably in The Hobbit. That ring was awesome. You could turn invisible. You don't have to worry about anything. You get to Fellowship of the Ring. That ring comes with a lot of baggage all of a sudden.
Yeah, big eye.
You can have your sword plus +5, but there are 9 demigods floating around now who kill you every time you unsheathe
that big eye.
Because the DM changed the rules.
It was burning and lidless above Minas Morgul. Yeah, the DM did change the
Tolkien
rules.
Said, no, this is too powerful. I need to put something else with it. So you are seen when you're invisible just by
he was bad. Sauron was just the necromancer back in The Hobbit. He was hiding out in Mirkwood.
Don't reason out the example, because it doesn't make any sense
anymore.
Dude,
are you telling me that Tolkien was a poopy red Connor?
There's Adam's first profanity at it.
Yeah.
No,
I'm sorry, I get defensive about Tolkien.
Okay. I think sometimes, though, the threat alone of taking the character could be enough, that if you warn the person you go too far with this, your character becomes an NPC.
You would be surprised. I've threatened Phil. Completely doesn't faze him. Phil, if you roll a 12, I'm probably going to kill your character. And I have seen him cheat to roll the 12. for me to kill his character.
Now, well, is this...
Phil, what are you doing?
Is this because Phil...
No, there's no explanation.
Spike, man.
Did he do the thing where he rolled first, looked at the number, and then told you what the roll was for?
No, he did the thing where he rolled behind his hand, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh.
And he's like, I rolled a 12. And I'm like, dude, roll that again. You did not roll a 12. It's like, did the same thing again. I'm like, dude, I'm going to kill your character.
In Phil's case, I gotta think it's just he doesn't get it or doesn't believe you. Because I can remember even going back to high school, and this was an early high school, like sophomore year, we were not the most mature gamers on the face of the earth. And I don't say this to down anyone who's listening who is, you know, about that age. It's just this is the way our group was.
Game.
Yeah, it doesn't game.
He listens.
This is the way our group was. And we had one guy in the group who just got off on some of the sickest crap imaginable in these games. And we were playing, this is the first round of Ravenloft, and his character was behaving in these horribly evil fashions because he is a human being, got off on some really sick stuff. But even with him, as Lance are like taking him over and messing with his head, the game master, which would have been Mike, warned him that if you reach a certain point, you become an NPC. And even he at this point had the good sense to stop the direction his character was going because he did not want to lose everything that he had accrued so far.
Sometimes you can't reason.
Sometimes
you just gotta take.
Some men can't be reasoned with. They can't be bought. They can't be bullied. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
And some people don't want their characters to see the next
John,
round.
I'm a man of my word.
What? Is that the end of it?
Well, that's just, a lot of people are going to die tonight. I'm a man of my
word. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was trying to complete your joke there, and your own joke just went over your head.
That hurt me right here in the heart.
Well, once Michael Caine stopped talking, I stopped listening.
I can't blame you. I know.
That's an operating doctrine of life for Johnny G.
Michael Caine stopped talking.
There's a niche here that I know I've wanted to play a character's fall before and have said to the GM, look, I want to play somebody who is going to end up probably, you're going to have to take the character from me or I'm going to retire once I hit a certain fall. I think this would be fun. I think it'd tell a good story and make the campaign more interesting. And that's worked for me in the past. I've only done it once because it's only fun once.
The
difference
there, I think, is that you can game with an endpoint in mind for the character.
Oh, yeah.
That just as the game master in some cases may have an endpoint in mind for the plot. I have played campaigns before as well where we've had endpoints in mind for the characters that we have sat down with the GM. There was one game I played where I believe my character out of all the characters in there was the only one to survive. And we loosely call this, I think we've mentioned it before on the show, we loosely called it our All-Stars game. And the reason we called it that was this gaming group had been gaming for years. And this was in the high school and college days when we gamed constantly. And what we all did is we each picked out our one favorite character and put them together into a single party. And when we sat down, Chad told the game master, my character is going to die, and this is how I want it to happen. I don't care how we get there. I don't care how it happens. I don't want to know how it happens. But by the time the game is over, I want him to have died in this fashion. Tim's character ended up dying. It was not planned. But the death was such a dramatic death and so awesome. It created a turning point in my character's life because he convinced my character some things that should not, you know, it's just, I don't want to get into this too much with the gaming story.
Good, my eyes are glazing.
But the point is that it worked out so well that we ran with it. But that's very, very different than having a character where you had no intention of this character dying. You had no intention of this character becoming an NPC. It's just the game master, and I think this is the order of events. You try the metagaming. Look, dude, this is causing problems. You move from metagaming to threats. I'm going to take your character. And then you move to action. You take the character.
Depending on how spiteful you want to be, you can make this death spectacular or not.
Yeah.
Infection. Give me your sheet.
And you know what? If the person bitches too much, they're probably a detriment to your group anyway. And you guys just reschedule the next gaming session without them. Because like I said, when you guys sit down, the agreement among everyone has to be that, look, we are a team, the game master, the players, the people in the neighboring rooms that are being kept awake by our noise. We're all a team working to make this a success.
You guys must have some fun games.
Working to make this. Oh, man, you've never bothered the people nearby with your games?
No.
No, neither have I.
Yeah, you have.
When?
In Chad's old place, we got yelled at for the noise. In Chad's apartment, we got yelled at for the noise. In my apartment, we've gotten yelled at.
Man, I can't tell you.
I ignored all them because none of them were Michael Caine.
I can't. Well, this is consistent. I can't tell you how many times I have had parents of one person or another over my years of gaming tell us to hold it down and knock it off. I cannot tell you how many times.
Actually, I was really lucky with that. Like, my parents didn't care.
I missed something.
Yeah, my parents didn't care, and I had a basement.
Well, I've never been told
that's
to
problem
quiet down, ever.
We were playing in basements, but where we were playing was typically right by, just bad luck, right beneath bedrooms. So with the air conditioning vent, which is not a very good noise barrier.
No.
And we'd get into it. We'd get up and raise our voices and whatever.
Oh, we'd raise our voices and say, laugh.
It always
and
my parents, were, my parents had that, four boys. They didn't even know.
Right. Yeah, my parents had two.
We got a couple minutes left, so I think we can hit one more short topic. At least I think it'll be a short topic. And if not, well, we'll just let the episode go where it goes. But this one comes from forum user Mantis. He had a great question, which is one that I struggled with throughout my gaming history, and I believe I have successfully conquered. How do you get players involved from the get-go? We're starting a first game. Everyone's got brand new characters. How do you get the players interested in the game and the players into their characters from the very first game?
Crash their ship.
Just like we talked about last time. Start out with an action scene.
You gotta start in media res.
I ran a first game last night.
Tell us about
it, Johnny
G.
En route to their regular old boring ho-hum deployment with the Imperial Security Bureau. They got hit by a gravity well and nosedived into a planet.
Wait.
You
ran the first game for this group last night, and you also had the problem of they aren't getting along and they're fighting each other the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, dude. First, this is not the worst firestorm that I've ridden into as a
first
GM.
First games, historically, at least within my gaming groups, have always been very rough.
Yeah, they are always rough.
When we do a post game where we're trying to look over the game and how it went, usually the conversation goes something like, that was really good for a first game.
Yep.
Or, that didn't go so well, but we expect it because it's a first game. It's kind of like the way that people look at middle parts of trilogies, that they just expect them to be boring
Excuse
and pointless.
Me. The Empire Strikes Back is the crowning jewel of human creativity.
I don't disagree with you, but you would not believe the number of people I have heard throughout the course of my life, not necessarily in reference to Empire.
Yeah,
but
no, just, I know what you mean.
But
middle,
just in general, say,
middle
well,
installments.
This
kind of, I like 2 hours, too.
Say, like, well, this kind of sucked, but this was a middle
movie.
But
Temple of Doom sucked.
What?
Temple of Doom sucked.
Oh, I'm with
Luke.
No Nazis,
Dan.
No Judeo-Christian artifacts. I'm with you.
I'm not.
No
Temple
plot.
Of Doom's awesome. He shoots that guy with the sword, and it was improvised. What more
that
do you want?
That was Raiders, dumbass.
Yeah, that was Raiders.
He which is a great
the,
movie.
He went for the gun in
No. Right.
Tomb.
Temple
wait,
of
wait,
Doom.
Wait, wait.
No.
Am I,
Temple
am
of
I
Doom.
Off?
Yeah, you're off.
You're off.
Temple of Doom would have been a perfect movie if they just panned left. And what I mean by that, the first scene of the movie should have been the last scene of the movie. I want to know about his adventures in China getting that gem from ancient Chinese temples.
I see.
If that movie had ended
short round
with that scene, because I think that would have been a much cooler.
I will give you guys
that movie needed
one,
John Rhys Davis.
That was the one thing
really?
I was going to give you. The lack of John Rhys Davis.
Never wind up. Just pitch.
But if that movie had been about him fighting like the Chinese mob, all the while going through these ancient Chinese ruins, trying to get that diamond or whatever it was he had. That would have been a fantastic
You know
movie.
What? I think that might be a great
we
solution to the problem of how to get people
die.
Interested. Start off with a killer first scene that sets up like a mystery like that, like where people are just talking about things that have happened
right.
that you don't explain.
See, that's something else I found that works, that getting people riled up with an action sequence is a good way because it gets people immediately interested. But one of the things it also does that I found it can do at least is they skip over the character. That because the first thing they see is your ship has crashed and you're in panic mode, that people cease looking at their character and cease thinking about their character's personality and jump straight into an act mode. That how or a reactive mode? How am I going to react to this? What are my stats? What are my tools? And they skip over the personality. Something I have found that works better in my games is I try to weird people out with the first scene.
Yeah, I know.
That have a scene where like it starts off with like one of the characters having this really bizarre hallucination and they don't know why. Or something that starts...
I know you've done that to us twice.
Yeah. Or something that starts off with a character like getting a letter that just in the context of their life makes no sense. Another thing I think goes a long way is good setting description. Make the people... The better you can get their attention, and some of this depends on your personality, because if you're kind of a dry, monotone speaker, you're not that good at describing things, this may not be the best way to go. But if you can stand up there, project your voice, and get their attention, sometimes just describing the setting especially if you give them obvious things to do, is enough to give their attention, that you stand up and describe, there's this town and the sun rises like this and here's what the weather's like and there's a fair in town and this is going on and you notice there's this one guy doing fortune telling near the entrance and there's a part of the guy of the circus challenging people to a fight over this way, and you instantly give them these hooks where it's like, and hopefully you as a game master know their characters, so you already know the things that are going to interest them.
I described the astromech droid becoming aware of himself and the universe around him. That kind of worked, and it was pretty weird, too.
See, I've found one of the best tools for me has been to immediately give important choices. And it's kind of backwards thinking, because it's the first session. You really don't know your characters very well. You have to grow. But by giving people important choices to start out with, it immediately draws them in and makes them think about their character. And especially if they have immediate consequences, choices that are soon resolved so they can see how the world works and get them a little more involved in it. And the key is not to make the consequences so bad that you're punishing the character for making a choice that they wouldn't had they been a little more knowledgeable about the campaign or about their characters.
You know what our groups have done away with?
Choices?
No. No. I'm the reverse. I'm the non-railroading GM. No, what our groups have largely gotten rid of, not entirely, is what we call the meetup game.
The meetup game is useless.
It's useless for two reasons. One, it's campy as hell. You take this group of people, and especially if you've not done a group template or anything like that, you take a bunch of people that have no reason to be working together except the fact that either A, an external force is forcing them to work together, or B, you just accept they have this giant P stamped on their forehead that only you can see, which indicates they are a player and you must work with them. And on top of that, they always go the same way, that you are the bartender. For no particular reason, a man walks into your bar and you start talking to him. And, oh, now the place is getting robbed, so you have to work together. And we've done away with them. And I'm not saying they're always bad, but we, in our group, have they're a policy boring. That when the game starts, you guys already know each other. You're already together. Or if you're not together, it's because three of you are on the space station and one's on the shuttle that's currently docking at the space station.
I'll go ahead and say they're always bad. You know, when you start out playing, when you're just learning the game, and when, you know, we started playing when we were in high school, yeah, that's the way to go because you don't know how things are done. But it you're right. It's cheesy, it's boring, and it's no fun. And you never really get to know the players because or the characters because it's such a trite setup that nobody wants to explore it any further. I like that a lot of games these days are actually incorporating mechanics in to help you get past that. And again, I'll refer back to probably my favorite part of Spirit of the Century, which is when you define those aspects I talked about, the last few have to be relating to other characters. Like you and character X were in an adventure back, you know, a year ago. Describe that, take some aspects from that. So you have that backstory to go on immediately.
We do that as well, but we do that more kind of with the group template discussion where we say, look, I will not allow a single player into this party that does not have a direct, meaningful connection to at least one other person. And that better, I should draw a line, and I don't care if there's degrees of separation, but I better be able to draw a line from any member of this party to any other member of this party. Like if we have four people, two knowing each other and the other two knowing each other is not sufficient.
No.
That I have to be able to draw a line from any person to any other person crossing significant relationships that are not going to be cast aside at the first time you hit a fork in the road.
And watch out for a single hub character because his player might go to Rome for a semester.
Yes.
Good point.
Yes.
Well, that was by design, though.
Was it?
Yeah, you're the GM. Intentionally.
I wasn't isolated. I was at the center of everything.
Oh, yeah.
The only reason anyone worked together is because everyone knew me and then I left.
Yeah, but as soon as you left, we rewrote it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. See, you are correct, though, that yes, you need to be careful that one character alone does not serve as the hub for the party. Because like you said, the guy goes to Rome, the guy quits playing, the guy has a falling out with you as a friend. Whatever happens, he or she misses too many sessions.
Yeah, misses one session. Yeah.
Melina did this to me. She put me in a real bind last game because I was kind of focusing on her character, not for the whole campaign, but just at that moment in the campaign, and she kept missing games. And it's like we can't progress the plot because her reaction to the situation is too critical. And that was a mistake on my part. This is kind of a no-no. Something else I found that works is screw with the characters. You've got their backgrounds. If you know there's this one guy and let's say he's got a girlfriend, he wrote into his background, you start the campaign off making him roleplay the first time he's meeting her father. And if you can run that NPC really well, you've got his attention. And it's not with action. It's with character issues. Because if this is someone who's serious about their role playing, you've got someone instantly locked in. Now, this does not necessarily occupy the whole table. But if you extrapolate that out, you may be able to find something that can involve two or three people, at least the majority of the table, if not the whole table. And if you're not involving the whole table, just don't let it go too long.
Well, and you touched on something there that I've had done a lot in both my games and games I'm in, where the GM will take players aside or basically right before the game starts and run through their background with them, kind of help them get into character and riled up before things start. So when you're thrown in, you've already been role-playing a bit one-on-one for maybe 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, kind of getting things set out. So when you're back with the group, you're immediately locked into the game.
I don't know. That sounds like lone wolfing to me.
Well, that's a little too touchy-feely.
You know, though,
there's no touching.
I have to agree with him, though, that I have
below
seen
the belt.
I've never done it that way, but the pre-game prep has worked, where one of the things that I will do before the first game starts is, as we're all sitting there, I will tell everyone, all right, take 5 or 10 minutes, re-look over your background, reread your personality. And I give everyone, there's just kind of this 5 or 10 minutes of quiet before the first game where I let everyone kind of start to feel out their character and get into that zone. Then I begin the action. And I have noticed that if that's done right and the people take it seriously, that they're actually doing that, not just twiddling their thumbs or playing with their Game Boy, that really does make a difference. If people come into it, because it's not like, let's just say, a guy, Bob. Okay, Bob does not sit down at the table. And I'm not trying to coax him from being Bob into being Malathor. He's already
Malathor?
Yeah, which first
name
came
to mind. He's the brother
of
Phytor.
I rolled Perquacky Dice in my mind, and that's the name I came up with. But, you know, he's already done that transition on his own into this what's probably a horrible character if it's named Malathor.
Yes.
But he's done this transition on his own, so he starts the game already in that zone. NPCs, another great way. Especially if people have written them into their backgrounds. Mischievous familiars.
Incontinent toads.
Incontinent toads. Parents of the girlfriend. The girlfriend herself. If you're playing a military game, the commanding officer of your unit. The captain of the ship that you're on, who's not your CEO.
I used that one last night.
But just happens to be very, very lively. You can use common focal points. The group's all sitting there. There's really nothing going on. You just say, look, you guys are in the galley. And, of course, the game hasn't picked up its role yet, so they don't know how to talk, and they're kind of fuzzy on the characters. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, this colorful, boisterous NPC walks in and just starts busting the chops of everyone down there. And I don't mean bar brawl. I mean, just comes down there with this really boisterous personality. And it immediately gives him something to interact with. That Adam's character sitting over there. And the guy walks in, says, hey, how you doing? Picks up his drink, sees what he's drinking, takes a pull of it, you know, starts walking around with it. And now Adam's got this thing where he's like, okay, the dude's got my drink.
I shiv him.
You know,
and then instead of role-playing with him, they roll blind fire, gather information checks because they know nothing else to do.
But the point being here, that now I've given Adam something to work with, that a dude took his drink. This is easy to relate to. He can now be like, oh, I'm going to try and get it back or get a new one. And if you've got a proactive group of players, the other players can pick up on this. And now the guy sitting next to him can say, yeah, I'm really sorry they did that to you. Let me order you another one. He's kind of like that. It just make crap up on the board. You know, I was posted with him last assignment, and he's just kind of a jerk like that. But that NPC gives them something in common. Like when you run into a guy you used to work with or go to school with, what's the one thing you talk about? One thing you have in common.
Where'd you go to high school?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So you do this with an NPC where you instantly give them one common thing that they can talk about.
And you hit on one of the biggest missteps right in the middle of that you don't want to start people off in a room together with just themselves and say, okay, guys, role play. You're in a room together. Role play. Because that may work later in the campaign, but in the first session, you were going to get death
stares.
I'm
role playing. I'm naked.
Yeah, I fall asleep.
Because ideally, if you've written your character right, you have enough background and personality to where it's not as if your character just sprang up from the earth, right, you know, 30 seconds ago. But let's be honest, when you sit down at that table for the first game,
your character might as well have just
sprang up out of the earth 30 seconds ago. You have no shared history. Even if it's on your piece of paper, you have no shared history that's actually occurred in the
game
yet.
You haven't made gaming stories yet.
Yeah, yep, precisely. Your characters have no flow. They have nothing to talk about. It is very awkward.
If you're playing a rap game, they might have flow, but maybe not together.
You can
hustle and...
You could start them in a room together if one of the characters has external direction. For example, three of the characters are sitting down there. One of them was told to go down and get the others. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're okay. Now at least you've got something that's going to kick off the action. You better be prepared to back that up with something more.
Well, there's a good tip in there, too, in that give the players you know the best, or maybe the more experienced players, pull them off of the side before the game and say, look, I'm giving you this task. You get things going. You interact and draw the other ones out. You need to be the other kind of co-GM to start out with here.
Know your players. Absolutely 100% right. Know your players. Pick the strongest people at the table, the guys that are outgoing, the guys that are experienced role players, guys or gals, and lean on them with a little bit of metagaming. Hey, I'm going to need your help. Lean on them to get things moving.
So now you're touching before the game starts. Beginning.
And don't, I wouldn't say
it's not lone wolfing. It's out of character. That's a conversation.
I wouldn't say per se center the action on them, but give them the ability to start the action. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Give them the ability to start the action.
And most players are going to, you know, do anything to grab the spotlight. Well, the ones you're going to want to pick to do this are the ones who are going to want to have the spotlight to start out with anyway. Yeah. Right. So everybody wins.
And most players like being a plot instrument that's in on it with the GM, because then you're cool and in the middle of it all.
Alrighty then, I guess that's going to wrap up this episode. So I want to thank you guys all for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Later, boy.
Ta-ta.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.